Lot in Sodom is the title of the sermon today. Now, Jesus warned us that the time of his second coming could be compared with the days of Lot and with the conditions of Sodom. Let's turn to Luke chapter 17 and notice Christ's warning and prediction and prophecy. Luke 17, beginning in verse 28. First, he talked about the days of Noah. And then he goes on to say in verse 28, likewise, as it was also in the days of Lot. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so, verse 30, would it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. And in Matthew chapter 11, he also adds this. Matthew 11, verses 23 and 24, talking to the cities in Judah at his time. He says, "And you, Capernaum, who are exalted to heaven, will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I say to you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you." So the land of Sodom, the Sodomites, will have an opportunity to repent in the day of judgment. But the story, as we will discuss it today, doesn't give a good picture of Sodom. Genesis 11 and verse 27. And I'm reading verses 27 and verse 28 at this point. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, later called Abraham, Nahor and Haran, and Haran begot Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah, in his native land, in Ur. I'll pronounce it Ur, I don't know, maybe it's pronounced differently, but that's how I would pronounce it, Ur, of the Chaldeans. So if you look at the family tree, let's say, you will have Terah, the father of Abram, Haran, and Nahor. Now, of course, Haran then was the father of Lot, but Haran died early. And Nahor, he produced Bethuel, and then Bethuel was the father of Laban, that crooked car salesman, as you will recall, and Rebekah, and of course then Rebekah brought forth Leah and Rachel, and Jacob then married Leah and Rachel. So that is how the story goes, how is the family tree goes, and I know I had the family tree somewhere. For whatever reason, it disappeared. That happens, right? But I mean, so this is pretty much what it says. And so we have to keep that in mind, what the relationship is between Abraham and Lot. In Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1, we keep reading. "Now the Lord hath said to Abram, get out of your country, from your kindred, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Verse 4. "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran." Verse 5. "And then Abram took Sarai," later Sarah, "his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, the people whom they had acquired," literally the souls whom they had acquired, "in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan, and so they came to the land of Canaan." So God called Abraham, and you might say Lot, out of a pagan, unfriendly, godly environment. How ungodly it was, we can find by quickly turning, but keep your finger here in Genesis, by quickly turning to Joshua chapter 24. And let's look at verse 2. Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, your fathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham, and the father of Nahor, dwelt on the other side of the river in old times, and they served other gods." They were idol worshippers, idolaters. But the interesting thing is they apparently also somewhat worshiped the true God. So they did what many Christians do today. They engage in syncretism, which is kind of a mixture. Because notice in Genesis chapter 31 and in verse 53, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us, is a statement here by Laban. So Nahor is now brought in connection with the God of Abraham. And at the same time, he was also an idolater, as we have just read. Lot is mentioned, the son of Haran. Now, his name means concealed. It means obscure. It means the low one. Again, keep your finger in Genesis, but let's quickly go to Isaiah chapter 25, where this word in the Hebrew is used. Isaiah 25 and in verse 7. God will destroy on this mountain the surface of the covering cast over all people, and the veil that is spread over all nations. Covering. In Hebrew, the word is lot. So the name means to cover, to obscure, to conceal. And again, we will probably see in a moment why Lot was kind of obscure to an extent. Now, I'd like to quickly read to you how the people of Ur lived and why God had to take them out. I mean, Abraham. I'm taking this from Haley's handbook. It has this to say. Ur was in Babylonia, and the Babylonians had many gods and goddesses. They were worshippers of fire, the sun, moon, stars, and various forces of nature. Nimrod, who had exalted himself against God in building the Tower of Babel, was ever afterward recognized as a chief Babylonian deity. Marduk was a common form of his name. Later became identical with Baal, or Baal, B-A-A-L. Shamash was the name of the sun god. Sin, the moon god, was a principal deity of Ur, Abraham's city. Sin's wife was called Ningal, the moon goddess of Ur. She had many names and was worshipped in every city as the mother goddess. She's also referred to in the book of Jeremiah as the Queen of Heaven, a Catholic name today for Mary. It goes on to say, Nina was one of her names, from which the city of Nineveh was named. Her commonest name in Babylonia was Ishtar, from which the word Easter is derived today. She was the deification of the sex passion. And if you think of Easter rabbits and Easter eggs, all fertility symbols, you see the connection. Her worship required licentiousness. Sacred prostitution in connection with her sanctuaries was a universal custom among the women of Babylonia. In connection with her temples were charming retreats or chambers where her priestesses entertained male worshippers in disgraceful ceremonies. In addition to these prostitute priestesses, every maid, wife, or widow had to officiate at least once in a lifetime in these rites. Now, that is where Abraham grew up. That was the environment. It goes on to say, Abraham's countrymen were idolaters. His father was an idolater. There are legends of his being persecuted as a child for refusal to worship idols. How did Abraham know about God? No doubt by direct revelation from God, and moreover, Noah's life extended to the birth of Abraham. And Noah's life was overlapped by Methuselah by 600 years, while Methuselah's life was overlapped by Adam for 243 years. So Abraham could have learned directly from Shem Noah's account of the flood and Methuselah's account of Adam and the Garden of Eden. So, but the point is, Abraham had to be taken out of this environment. And there is another concept we have been talking about in the church, that Abraham was persecuted in Ur because he understood the laws of astronomy. And he proved that the sun, the moon, and the stars were created by God. The people in Ur believed they were gods themselves, and so they didn't want to hear from Abraham that these were just created and that there was a God in heaven who had created them. And that also caused persecution, and so Abraham was taken by God out of this environment. So with this background, let's keep reading in Genesis chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. Genesis 13, beginning in verse 1. Then Abraham went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. And Abraham was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. He was very rich because we read later that the servant said, God had made him so. God had blessed him. God had given him his riches. Verse 3. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, but not as many as Abram. See, Abram, later Abraham, was a lot richer than Lot. And Lot had riches, by the way, as long as he was with Abram. Verse 6. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell there. And there was strife, verse 7, between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. And the Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. Why was this mentioned? Because they were looking at these newcomers, Abraham and Lot, and they saw the strife. And so the kinsmen of Abraham and Lot, or the herdsmen, I should say, gave a pretty bad example to those who dwelt in the land. Verse 8. And so Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. See, we are brethren. We're not supposed to give that kind of a bad example to those surrounding us. Verse 9. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. Now, Abraham was the older. He had the right of first choice. But he gave that right up. He left it to Lot to make the first choice. For peace's sake, he gave up what is legally his and to bring about a peaceful situation. You might say it's this way. Abraham made a decision based on faith, because he trusted in God that God would bless him no matter what came out of it. Lot made a decision, as we will see, based on sight. Abraham increased in God's blessing. Lot decreased. Notice as it goes on in verse 10, and it tells you a lot about Lot's character. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. And then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. He chose what he saw to be the best land, but he also chose to live closer and closer towards Sodom, a very bad environment. Now, the separation between Abram and Lot at the time was probably the last act of an alienation which had already been going on between the two. We see that the people of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. They were sinful against the Lord. Why? Because they sinned against the law of God. Because sin is the transgression of the law. And we will see later on in what regard they did commit sins against the law of God. Verse 14. Now after that, the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him. Notice, now comes an interesting promise. After Lot had separated from Abram. Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants. You see, as long as Lot was there with Abram, God couldn't really bless him in that way. And here's the first time that God makes it very clear the land is going to be given to Abram and his descendants. Before, if you were to go back to chapter 12 and verse 7, it was just saying that it would be given to Abram's descendants. But now Abram was specifically included. This brings up a point. As I said, as long as Abram and Lot were together, God couldn't bless Abram in the way he wanted to. The same goes to us, or for us today, if, let's say, we have a quote-unquote Christian and a quote-unquote non-Christian. What I mean by that, one person is converted, the other one is not converted. It is a bad idea for those two people to enter into a work relationship, a partnership. It normally doesn't work, and we have seen this time and again. There are all kinds of problems with the Sabbath and even with the whole mentality of the people. So my advice would be, if you think about it, don't do it. Don't do it. Let's go on in chapter 14, beginning in verse 8. And the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar, went out and joined together in battle in the valley of Siddim against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of nations, Amraphael, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against five. And now the valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell there, and the remainder fled to the mountains. And then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way, verse 12. And they also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, notice, and his goods, and departed. Let's keep reading first in verse 13. And then one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And he divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus, verse 16. And so he brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. Now, we got to make a few comments here, as you probably imagined. Verse 12 told us that now Lot lived in Sodom. Before that, he was pitching his tent near Sodom. But in the process of time, he had moved into Sodom, which, of course, is a big mistake and also a warning which Lot didn't heed. Notice Psalm 1 and verse 1, a warning for us today. Psalm 1, 1. Blessed is a man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. First you walk by, then you stand and listen, and then you become part of the sinners by sitting down. As we will see, Lot was actually sitting down in Sodom. Also notice Psalm 26, verses 4 and 5. David is saying, I have not sat with idolatrous mortals, nor will I go in with hypocrites. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. But Lot didn't think that way. He had some motives, perhaps we'll talk about in a moment. But anyhow, he was in Sodom, and so when those kings came and overtook Sodom, they took him too as a prisoner. Now, maybe they did because they understood the relationship between Lot and Abram or Abraham, and they thought maybe they could get a huge big ransom from Abraham for kidnapping or taking Lot, making him a prisoner of war. Now, we also have read in verse 14, let's read it again, that when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants. Now, armed is not the best word here. In the Hebrew, the word is ruk, R-U-K, or R-U-Q, and it just means to draw or draw out. So Abraham drew out, or the NIV says called out, those servants who had been trained. They hadn't been necessarily trained for warfare. They had been trained to do the things you need to do when it comes to a house which is also accompanied by cattle and all the things which need to be done in that context. But yes, of course, now they were used by Abram to get Lot back if people were killed in the process. The Bible doesn't say that that was right. You have to understand that, because the Bible does condemn war, period. War fought by human beings, unless God specifically orders it, and we don't see that God did in this case. It's also interesting that here the word Dan is used. He says they went all the way up until Dan, verse 14. Now, that city wasn't called Dan by the time Abram lived. In Judges, you can look at this later, chapter 18, verse 29, you find that then that city was named Dan, not before that. So we understand that Moses wrote the five book of Moses, including book of Genesis, but we also understood that apparently it was the priest Ezra who put the Bible together, the Old Testament. And so he would make some modifications. So when the people would read that later, they wouldn't have necessarily known that city by its old name, but they would have known it by the name Dan. And we see also that Abraham acted very quickly. He didn't wait a long time. He immediately acted to pursue those who had kidnapped Dan, or rather Lot, going all the way up to Dan, to rescue him. Now let's drop to chapter 18, where we want to keep going with the story regarding Lot, mainly. Chapter 18, beginning in verse 16, it says, the men rose from there and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to send them on the way. Now, what happened prior to that, that Jesus Christ and two angels had appeared to Abraham. And so they appeared as men, manifesting themselves as men. It appears like Abraham knew who they were. And so now, those two angels, looking like men, rose to go to Sodom. Verse 17, and the Lord said, this was Jesus Christ, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. It says here in the New King James, for I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him. But a better translation, as the Authorized Version has it, I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. And the Lord said, verse 20, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me, and if not, I will know. And then the men, those two angels, turned away from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood still before the Lord. And when we read, of course, we read about this very moving exchange between Abraham and Christ, pleading with Christ that ultimately, if it's 10 righteous people in Sodom, please don't destroy Sodom. And Christ said, okay, if you find 10 righteous people in Sodom, you're not going to destroy that city. Genesis 19 and verse 1. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Sodom, the meaning is flaming or burning. That is the way the Hebrew describes it. Flaming or burning. And of course, we have already seen in the description prior to this why that might be the case, and we will see it in a moment as well. Now it says that Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Notice, sitting in the gate. Perhaps he was a leader in Sodom by that time, heavily involved in the political affairs of Sodom. Keep your finger here, but I'd like to turn quickly to a few scriptures. Genesis chapter 23 and verse 10. Because the idea that you sit in the gate has a lot more than just sitting there. Political activity is going on in the gate. Genesis 23 and verse 10. Now Ephron dwelt among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the presence of the sons of Heth, all who entered at the gate of his city. And then again in verse 18, this was deeded, he says, to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the gate of his city. Then look at Genesis chapter 34 and verse 20. Genesis 34 and verse 20. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the man of their city. And then also in Genesis chapter 34 and verse 24. And all who went out of the gate of his city heeded Hamor and Shechem, his son, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gates of a city. And there are more scriptures which seem to indicate that when we are talking about that you are at the gate, in the gate, you are involved in some very important, many times political affairs. The Ryrie Study Bible says, the gate of Sodom was the center of public activity. Lot's being there may indicate he was a judge in the city. Now, why would he be in that city? Why would he be sitting there, even perhaps in a high political and judicial position? Did he think perhaps he could change the people of Sodom? He should have stayed away, far away from that environment. And perhaps his high position in the city was one of the reasons why he wasn't too anxious to leave Sodom, and he was asked to leave. Let's go back to chapter 19, verse 1. So he was sitting in the gate, and she sees those two men, those two angels. And when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face towards the ground. And he said in verse 2, "Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, then you may rise early and go on your way." And they said, "No, but we will spend the night in the open square." Now this was, of course, also a test now by those angels for Lot. Verse 3, "But he insisted strongly, and so they turned into him and entered his house. And then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate." Now at that time, we didn't have yet the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Feast of Unleavened Bread was initiated at the time of Moses in Egypt. But you see already the symbols pointing at it. Washing feet, eating unleavened bread, a feast was made. All of this shows an interesting circumstance. Coming out of sin is really what we're talking about here. Lot wasn't, at this point, really able to do that yet. Let's go on in verse 4. "Now before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot and said to him, 'Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally.'" That we may know them. The Ryrie Study Bible says that is to have homosexual relations. God's attitude toward this sin is seen in the destruction of Sodom. And then they quote several scriptures we will go into in a moment. The Nelson Study Bible says, "The Hebrew word for known is ordinarily used for normal sexual relationships between a male and a female. Here it is used to describe the perversion of homosexual sex between men. The term sodomite comes from this passage." Well, we are quoting commentaries. We are now going to quote the scriptures. Does this qualify as hate speech? In some parts around the world, it would. Are we therefore supposed to shrink back from what the Bible says? Notice Leviticus chapter 18. Keep your finger in Genesis. Verse 22. "And let me also point out this. God doesn't change. His character, his standards, his values don't change. What he wrote here, he believes today." Leviticus 18 and verse 22. "You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination," God is saying. Leviticus 20, verse 13. "If a man lies with a male as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination." And look at the penalty as it was enforced in effect at that time under Moses. "They shall surely be put to death." Now, we are not executing people today, obviously. I mean, we in the church don't have any jurisdiction anyhow about that. But that's how strongly God feels about this. Notice Romans chapter 1, and verse 26. "For this reason, because they refused to know God, God gave them up to vile passions." And it talks about both male and female committing what is shameful, verse 27. Verse 28, "God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting." And on it goes. Notice also 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 9. These are all the scriptures, by the way, the Ryrie Study Bible quotes in that comment which I had just read to you. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9. "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor sodomites, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners will inherit the kingdom of God." 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 10. "Fornicators, sodomites, kidnappers, liars, perjurers, and if there is any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine, According to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which was committed to my trust, he says, these people will be punished by God. We've heard it all said. The times change, and we change with the times. But that is not the way it should be. The fact, as I will talk to you about in a moment, that most people today in the Western world accept homosexual conduct, accept same-sex marriages, doesn't mean, must not mean, that true Christians are supposed to do the same. But let's go back to chapter 19 and verse 4, because remember now, we said that Christ had promised to Abraham, if he finds 10 righteous people in Sodom, Sodom wouldn't be destroyed. Now, in verse 4, we read that the men of Sodom, both old and young, from every quarter and so on, came, and they wanted to have sexual intercourse, homosexual intercourse with the men, the two angels. They didn't know that they were men. But what about the women? I mean, does this mean that only the men were coming and proved thereby that they were not righteous? What about the women? Well, notice, it says the men of Sodom, both old and young, but then it goes on to say all people. All people. That is more than just the men. That would include women. So they were there as well. What does this mean? No, they maybe were anxious to also have sexual relationship with those two men. That's possible. It's also possible that they were there to endorse and approve the conduct of their men. But they showed through their conduct that they were not different, any different from the men. And so they were not 10 righteous people in Sodom. Let's go on. Verse 6. So Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind him, and said, please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See, now I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason that they have come under the shadow of my roof. Now, some say, oh, well, he did that because this was a law of hospitality. So he had to protect those two men. He didn't know. Maybe he didn't know. I suppose he didn't know that they were angels. And so he was willing to sacrifice his two daughters in order to protect the angels. Now, I really doubt that was his motive. Now, whatever his motive was, though, the problem is that his heart had become hardened in Sodom, insofar as the sins of the people of Sodom were concerned. Of course, he was sitting in the gate. But it's possible, and some have suggested that he was engaged in bargaining. Friedman's commentary on the Torah had this to say. When Abraham goes to buy a tomb for Sarah, the seller says to him, I've given it to you. But he doesn't give it. Then Abraham says, I have given the money. And then the seller says, land worth 400 shekels of silver, what's that between me and you? As if this were a small sum, but it was a very large sum. And Abraham pays it without another word. Interpreters have frequently noted the traditions of negotiating there. Deliberate overstatement, saying things one doesn't mean. It's called gracious insincerity. I suggest, this commentary says, that they apply here as well. Lot is supposed to make an extraordinary gesture. He offers his own daughters, but no one is supposed to take him up on it. And then in this horrible town, the gesture doesn't work anyway. The people only become angry. Now, maybe giving the possibility of a most generous interpretation, that was Lot's motive. Maybe. But if it was or not, I mean, I've been in Yugoslavia where people like to bargain. I mean, I was one time there and I looked at this beautiful chess play and I only had that much money left, and I said, well, that's all I can give you. They wanted to have a lot more. And then they said, no, it's not enough. And, of course, they started creating a scene, and they wanted to look at my wallet to see how much money I had. And when they saw I didn't really have more, then they grudgingly gave it to me. Same happened to me in Mexico. So they like to bargain, right? So it's entirely possible that that was Lot's intent. But nevertheless, remember, the daughters heard that. How must the daughters have felt when their father made that offer? Whether that was serious or not. It explains what will happen later. But in any event, the people didn't take him up on that offer. And so it goes on to say, in verse 9, they said, stand back. And then they said, this one came in to sojourn, and he keeps acting as a judge, perhaps indicating that he was a judge in the town. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. And so they pressed hard against the man Lot and came near to break down the door. But the men reached out their hands and pulled Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they became very trying to find the door. And then, verse 12, the man said to Lot, have you anyone else here? And son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, verse 13, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Verse 14, and so Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. Why? Because Lot lived there. Couldn't have been that bad if Lot himself lived there. And the sons-in-law knew that. Of course they knew that. They said, you got to be joking. To tell us to leave the city, what about you? You have been there all this time. Indications are 20 years. He lived in Sodom. Now, who are those sons-in-law? There are two possibilities. The one is that they were married to other daughters of Lot, and so they and the other daughters of Lot all perished because nobody would leave together with Lot and his wife and the two other daughters. Now, there's also the possibility that those sons-in-law were what you would call betrothed to the two daughters of Lot. Betrothal was considered a binding marriage, but the marriage had not been consummated yet. Mary and Joseph were called husband and wife. Before the consummation of the marriage, they were betrothed. So that's another possibility, because Lot said, I have two daughters who have not seen a man. Yes, of course, because the marriage hadn't been consummated yet. And so that's another possibility. So whoever and however you want to look at this, whoever those sons-in-law were, they decided not to leave because they thought that Lot was joking. And if they were married to other daughters of Lot, then those other daughters didn't leave either. They also felt they were just being joked at by Lot. Now, you might want to look at the Q&A later. How many daughters did Lot have? Q&A written by Brian Gale, where he goes into this in more detail. Now, what was the sin of Sodom? We have already identified some of it, but there's more. In Ezekiel chapter 16, notice verses 49 and 50. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw fit, God says. And also in Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 9. The look on their countenance witnesses against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil upon themselves. Not only was it the sin of homosexuality, or also called those who do it as sodomites, they were proud of it. They didn't hide it. Many years, those who were homosexuals at least did not publicly proclaim it. But then the idea was, well, we have to have equality and we have to make it a cause, an agenda. I have a chart here, chart of the world. And you have all kinds of colors. You might be able to see the colors. You have the color green, and then you have to have the color of a light yellow and of a dark yellow, and then you have the color of black, and you have the color of a, you know, light orange. The green, color green, it's pretty much all of America and much of South America. These are countries with national laws allowing same-sex marriage. And then you have the light yellow. These are civil recognitions of same-sex partnerships. And then you have others, the dark yellow, same-sex partnerships are not recognized. Then you have the brown, prosecution of homosexuals. You have the black, death penalty. Now, you will find that in Africa, most of the countries are not allowing same-sex marriages, and some actually persecute or prosecute homosexuals, and some actually inflict the death penalty. When it comes to Russia and China and those countries of the Far East, same-sex partnerships are not recognized. But when it comes to Europe, again, green, in most European countries, it's recognized. And as of yesterday, Germany was added as one country where same-sex marriages are now recognized. Now, in our updates, and I just am taking those from this month of June, we had several articles, which I'd like to again bring to your remembrance, because you all have very carefully read them all, I'm sure. Here's an article by The Guardian, dated June 2, about Ireland. As well as becoming Ireland's first gay prime minister, Varadkar will also become the country's youngest leader. Now, it talks about he belongs to a very conservative party, but he portrays the image of a new progressive Ireland, symbolized best in May 2015, when the Republic voted overwhelmingly in favor of gay marriage. Goes on to say, no one really cares if he is gay. And in a 2015 interview, he said, when he came out declaring to be gay, it's part of my character. I suppose. Part of my character. Now, godly character is defined as distinguishing between what's right and wrong, deciding on what's right, and doing what is right. Ungodly character would be, again, looking at what's right and what's wrong, but then deciding to accept the wrong, and then doing what's wrong. There's also character, of course, but it's not godly character. I have another article from the GTA, the Jewish paper, dated June 9. Public support for allowing gay couples to marry in Israel has reached an all-time high, 76% supported. The state, at this point, recognizes gay marriages and civil unions performed abroad. They don't do it yet in the state. But it's getting there, because here's another article by the Times of Israel, dated June 10. Over 2,000 people from Israel and abroad attended Tel Aviv's Gay Pride Parade on Friday. The parade is the region's biggest, as Israel stands in sharp contrast to much of its neighbors. Across the rest of the Middle East, gay and lesbian relationships are mostly taboo. Same-sex relations are punishable by death in Iran, Sudan, and elsewhere. Britain's ambassador to Israel is David Quarry, an openly gay man. Tel Aviv, which has already been acknowledged as the world's most gay-friendly city, will continue to be a lighthouse city, spreading the values of freedom, tolerance, and democracy to the world, said Tel Aviv Jaffa Mayor Ron Holday. Goes on to say that gay tourism is one of the pillars of our economy. And the theme of the parades this year was bisexual visibility, making it one of the largest parades in the world celebrating bisexuality. Let's read about the ambassador of America. An article dated June 24 by Breitbart. The Obama appointed ambassador to Romania, Hans Klemm, sounds somewhat German, I have to say, has stoked a national debate on the role of U.S. diplomacy abroad by openly advocating same-sex marriage. Last month, Klemm attended a widely publicized gay pride march in Bucharest on May 20 to show his support for the LGBT agenda in a country where same-sex marriage is still illegal. Last fall, Klemm explained in an interview with a Romanian news agency why he publicly pushes for gay marriage. While acknowledging that it is a sensible subject, Klemm claimed the U.S. Supreme Court, in its infinite wisdom, I might add, has resolved the legal problem over gay marriage, stating that it is unconstitutional and illegal to deny civil marriage to same-sex couples. Let me just add, in an unbelievable twist, they totally rewrote the Constitution. There's no way that the founders, when the Constitution was adopted, had that kind of scenario in mind. No way. Goes on to say, therefore, this ambassador said, the U.S. should support gay marriage everywhere in the world. Klemm's advocacy of gay marriage has met with backlash in the conservative country, and the ambassador has been criticized for abusing his position to meddle in the internal affairs of the nation. And then we also announced that Deutsche Welle wrote on June 27 that there was a discussion in Germany about same-sex marriages. That was before the parliament voted on that, because they voted on it on Friday, and we sent the update out on Thursday. But we already said that the same-sex marriage concept will be approved with a great majority in the parliament the next day, which in fact it was. But the article says, all of Angela Merkel's potential coalition allies favor same-sex marriage. So, if she should win in September, she has to enter into a coalition. She can't rule the country all by herself. And so, the coalition parties, not only do they favor same-sex marriage, some have already been saying it's a precondition for a coalition. So, this move was also a political one. It goes on to say, same-sex marriage is already legal in 14 EU states, including France, Spain, Portugal, the UK, and the Benelux countries. Homosexuality in politics has also become much more commonplace. Many homosexuals occupy important government posts and live openly in same-sex relationships. So you have the modern tribes of the ancient house of Israel, the main ones, the United States of America and Great Britain, all four, openly for same-sex marriage, gay marriage, you might say. And Israel, Tel Aviv in particular, 70% of the Jewish people. Now, not everybody is for it. This morning I found an article which was published by Israel National News, dated June 28. But listen to this, and listen how the British government, Ephraim, is willing to handle, quote-unquote, this situation. A private Jewish school with 212 students in northern London is in danger of being ordered to close after it failed its third inspection since February 2016, last month. The school, which teaches girls ages 3 to 8, was reported as not giving students a full understanding of fundamental British values because it didn't teach the LGBT agenda. According to the Office of Standards in Education, Children's Services and Schools, the girls are not taught explicitly about issues such as sexual orientation. This restricts the pupils' spiritual, moral, social, and cultural development and does not promote the equality of opportunity in ways that take account of different lifestyles. And that's even talking about a private school. It goes on to say that when it comes to public schools, the standards for sex and relationship education are even much more stringent, meaning you have to speak even more openly about it. We're talking about girls ages 3 to 8. Do you think that God in any way would approve of something like that? Not if I read what I'm reading in my Bible. Remember that Christ said, the days will be as they were in the days of Noah, in the days of Noah and in the days of Lot. Let's go on in chapter 19, and let's read in verse 15. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. And while he lingered, Lot didn't want to go. He didn't want to go. Even though he had just encountered this terrible situation with all the people of the city trying to have this sexual intercourse with those two men, while he lingered. The men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him. And they brought him out and set him outside the city. And so it came to pass, when they had brought them outside, that he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. And then Lot said to them, please, no, my lords. Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. Human nature in operation. Something good is being given to someone. He wants more. Verse 20. See now, the city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. So the soul isn't immortal, because he feels that if he doesn't escape to that city, his soul will die, because the soul is mortal. The human being is a soul. So he wants to go to that city, and the city we are talking about is Zoar, and the meaning of that city is little or insignificant. And that is in terms of the number of the people living there. It was a very small city. And he said to him, verse 21, see, I have favored you concerning this thing also, and that I will not overthrow the city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. And therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. As I said, little or insignificant. And the sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar, and then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah, from the Lord out of the heavens. Verse 25, and so he overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. Now, before I go on and explain what happened here, let's quickly turn to the book of Jude, but keep your finger here in Genesis. In Jude 7, it says here, Sodom and Gomorrah, and the cities around them, in a similar manner to these, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Eternal fire doesn't necessarily have to mean for all eternity. It's talking about the time as long as certain conditions prevail, remain unaltered. We have already read that the Sodomites will be in the second resurrection. But it's being done here and explained as an example. They have gone after strange flesh in the sense that they have committed homosexual activities. It wasn't just Sodom and Gomorrah. There were other cities involved as well. The other cities are mentioned. We actually have read it in Genesis 14 and verse 2. Admah and Zebulun. Now, Zoar was one of those other cities, but that was spared because of Lot going there. Those five cities, they are called the Covenant of Penapolis. So you have Sodom and Gomorrah and those two other cities, Adma and Zebulun, and they all were destroyed because they all did what the people in Sodom and Gomorrah did. And ruins, actually, and I will talk about that some more, could still be seen until the first century A.D., because Sodom and Gomorrah were situated at the southern end of the Dead Sea. I have here a summary of what happened in the commentary by Erdmann, and it says, a catastrophe which emptied this area of settled occupation is known from archaeology. And then they give some explanation regarding earthquakes and so on, which I don't necessarily want to cover because we don't know whether that actually is the way it happened. But it says, even so, Lot's wife drags behind, we haven't even read that yet, stopping to look, she dies. Local tradition calls salty cracks by the Dead Sea after her still. And then it says in a footnote, salt rocks near the Dead Sea and the acrid reek in the air are silent reminders today of the fate of Lot's wife. It also says, regarding the Dead Sea, it is so far below sea level that it has no outlet. The water evaporates, leaving a high concentration of salts which kill all life. But here's another interesting summary by Unger, the Unger Bible Dictionary, saying this. The five cities of the plain of the Jordan, Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboim, and Zoar, were located in the valley of Siddim at the southern end of the Dead Sea. Now covered with water, this region in 2065 BC was fertile and populous. About 2056, the salt and free sulfur in this area, which is now a burnt-out region of oil and asphalt, were miraculously mingled. Again, apparently by an earthquake coming to this region. The violent explosion hurled the salt and sulfur into the air red hot, so that it literally rained fire and brimstone over the whole plain. Whether that's the way it happened, I leave that to your judgment. It goes on to say, the great salt mass Jebel Ustum, mountain of Sodom, a five-mile-long elevation at the southwest end of the Dead Sea, recalls the episode of Lot's wife being turned into a pillar of salt. The cities of the plain are to be found under the slowly rising water of the southern part of the Salt Sea. Their ruins were still visible until the first century A.D. So archaeology even confirms that something like a destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah did occur. But now let's go back to Genesis chapter 19, and let's look at verse 26, which I haven't read yet. I'm reading it now. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Maybe salt just covered her and killed her that way. She wanted to go back. She didn't just turn back to look at the catastrophe. She wanted to go back because she still had her heart in Sodom. She didn't want to leave Sodom. She thought about maybe her sons-in-law. Maybe she thought about her other daughters, if in fact those sons-in-law had married other daughters. She thought about all the things she had had in Sodom, and now she is going somewhere, not knowing where. She wanted to go back. Let's turn to Luke chapter 17, and let's look at the warning Jesus Christ gave us. Luke 17, and verse 30. Even so, as it was in the time of Lot and Sodom, even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Verse 31. In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. You see, her possession was in Sodom. Her family was in Sodom. The sons-in-law were in Sodom. She didn't want to give that up. She was willing to return. But God had warned her not to do this. Christ is warning us here not to do this. When the time comes, the question is, what are our priorities going to be? Luke chapter 9, in verse 62. Luke 9 and verse 62. Jesus said to him, somebody who had some excuses as to why he didn't want to follow Christ right away, Jesus said to him, no one, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. That's a warning. Even Lot lingered, as we have read. Even he didn't feel so enthusiastically that he had to leave after God had told him that he should. Verse 27. And Abraham, verse 27 of Genesis 19, going back to Genesis 19, verse 27. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. And then he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain. And he saw and behold the smoke of the land, which went up like the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. Lot was saved because God remembered Abraham. If there hadn't been an Abraham, maybe Lot would not have been saved. He dwelt there. He dwelt in that city. And then it goes on to say in verse 30, then Lot went up out of Zoar, first he wanted to go there, and he dwelt in the mountains. And his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now, that is where God had said originally you should go. He didn't want to go there. He wanted to go to Zoar, and then he was afraid in Zoar. Why was he afraid in Zoar? Maybe because of the experiences he has had in Sodom. Maybe the people of Zoar became aggressive towards him, maybe blaming him for the destruction of Sodom. Who knows? He was afraid. He wanted to go. He went where God wanted him to be in the first place. Verse 31. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on the earth, in other words, in this region where they are living now, to come in to us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. Now they did this to an extent out of desperation, because they wanted to have a child or children. But they also had embraced the sins of Sodom. See, they had become like many of the people in Sodom had become. That was becoming now to them commonplace. Do we sin at times? Because our habits have become so ingrained in us that we may or may not even see them. Do we sin sometimes because we are acting because of desperation? They also justify their action. They said, oh, we are going to preserve the lineage of our father. That wasn't the real reason. The real reason was they wanted to have a child because it was a shame at the time in that culture not to have children. Sometimes we can easily justify our actions by bringing up some kind of concepts and ideas which aren't really true. But then the sin doesn't sound so bad. Verse 35. And then they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him, and he didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. Is that possible? I mean, he was so drunk that he didn't notice what was happening. Of course it's possible. And the Bible makes it very clear twice that it wasn't him, it was the daughters who did that. He didn't participate in it. But his prior conduct didn't help. Didn't help. He had given a very bad example to the daughters. Remember, he offered them up, whether he meant to or not, to those people of Sodom. Let's go on. Verse 37. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. And he is the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, verse 38, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. And he is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. The Moabites and the Ammonites caused a lot of problems to the Israelites throughout history. Moab means from the Father. Today it's found in Jordan and perhaps also in the western parts of Iraq. Benjamin or Ben-Ammi or the Ammonites means son of my people. In other words, his father and his mother were of the same family. Lot, one of his daughters. The Ammonites can be found today in Jordan. Now, the Bible, again, that's important we understand. The Bible sometimes records things. It doesn't endorse it. It doesn't approve of it. It just records about this incest. But the Bible very clearly condemns incest. Notice in Leviticus chapter 18. So nothing justified the conduct of the daughters. They had grown up with Lot, his wife, in Sodom. And as I said, they might have lived there for about 20 years. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 6. None of you shall approach anyone who is near of kin to him to uncover his nakedness. I am the Lord. The nakedness of your father or the nakedness of your mother you shall not uncover. She is your mother, you shall not uncover her nakedness. So very clearly, no sexual relationship between father and daughter or mother and son was permitted. Now, when it comes to prophecy, when it comes to the future, we find that in Daniel chapter 11 and in verse 41, that Moab and the Ammonites are going to escape the beast, the king of the north. And we find also a confederacy is described in Psalm 83, talking about a covenant between the Moabites and the Ammonites and other nations like the Edomites and modern Assyria. But then, later, the revived resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire in Europe, none other than the king of the north and king of Assyria, will fight against and destroy Moab and Ammon. And if you want to refresh your recollection, read our new Q&A, part 2, on the metaphors in the Bible referring to animal characteristics, and this is going to be described there, that Ammon and Moab ultimately will be destroyed by modern Assyria. But first they will be escaping the hands of modern Assyria for a while. Now back to Lot. I'm just bringing this up because the Ammonites and the Moabites had caused a lot of problems to the Israelites over the years, and of course here we have seen how they came into being. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. For if God didn't spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and didn't spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and verse 6, turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. No question why God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed with the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. Now we have to understand that Lot, as we have seen, was by no means without sin. He should not have lived in Sodom. As I said, he lived there apparently for 20 years. But he is still called righteous. Now, we don't quite know when the righteousness started, when his conversion began. But God looked at his heart, and God saw he was deeply troubled by what was going on there. Now, he didn't go as far as to get out of there, but he was deeply troubled by it. He didn't quite see how it affected him. He didn't quite see how it affected his wife. He didn't quite see how it affected the daughters and the sons-in-law. But he was troubled. And God looked at that. And he compared him with the ungodly and sinful people of Sodom. Now, he shouldn't have had anything to do with it, yes. But we also have to give great consideration to the mercy of God. And God is willing to forgive any time when we do something wrong and repent. Nevertheless, we are told and being told with these final admonitions in Ezekiel chapter 9. And that goes for us today because Christ is warning us. He says, think of Lot's wife. Think of Sodom and Gomorrah. Think of the conditions. Think about the fact that these will be the conditions just prior to my coming. And Christ's coming is near. Ezekiel chapter 9 and verse 4. The Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. Do we sigh and cry? Do we actually even recognize when we see and hear about abominations? Do we understand that what this world is coming to is an abomination to God? Do we understand how God looks at same-sex marriages? How God looks at homosexuality? Do we understand this? And there are so many more things I could bring up. Fighting in war and doing all these bad things. Do we understand this? And do we come out of it? Revelation chapter 18. Revelation 18 at verse 4. I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. You know, I don't think that Lot's wife shared in the sins of Sodom, that she acted the way the Sodomites did, but she was there. She was there. And she was supposed to come out. And she didn't come out. And so she received the plagues of Sodom and Gomorrah. And finally, let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Now, sometimes it's necessary to come out of an environment quite physically. We most certainly have to come out of it spiritually, so that we cannot and must not have anything to do with the way people think, our friends think, those who are in close contact with us, whether it's at work, whether it's in school, wherever it may be, because that's not going to save us. The fact that 99% of the people surrounding us think that way doesn't mean that you have to think that way. You have to begin to think the way God thinks. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17, therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. And I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. Let's do that, and we will be in God's kingdom when Christ returns.